My Child and Me, Traversing the Educational Terrain. This production consists of a series of poems representing our findings from a secondary analysis of two studies exploring the school experiences of parents of children with disabilities. There were 11 participants, 8 of whom were Hispanic. 4 of the Hispanic participants were not proficient in English, thus those interviews were conducted in Spanish and then translated into English. Exceptionalities were varied and included Asperger syndrome, developmental delay, giftedness, autism, behavior disorder, ADHD, learning disability, Tourette's, and Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. Data consisted of 317 pages of transcriptions from which 316 quotes emerged. For this piece, quotations coded as school interactions, future aspirations, hope, advocate, and belief in experts were extracted. These data consisted of 146 quotations. Quotations were collapsed by codes. Findings are presented via found poems, which are produced by selecting and combining memorable words and phrases from the data, adding poetic structure to the text. Each of the poems represents a composite of the experiences relayed by the participants.
Throughout the text, we have interwoven self-reflections in the form of meta-narratives and problematics, revealing how we, the researchers, interacted with and made meaning of the data based on our own individual experiences and multiple identities as caregivers, educators, and researchers. We purposefully refrained from providing extensive commentary beyond our own meaning-making, encouraging the audience to identify pieces that speak to them individually.
Sitting in the living room, multiple living rooms, at kitchen tables over coffee, they tell their stories, stories of parenting children with disabilities. We sit down with Allison's mother and father at their kitchen table. They share their daughter's challenges in school, the fine motor coordination delays, reading and vocabulary skills years ahead of her peers. Allison mystified them and confounded her teachers. Allison's mother remembers the night she waited eagerly for her husband to return and share what took place at the welcome night for parents of preschoolers.
Back in school. Parent conference night. Constant wiggling as adults try to find comfort in the child-sized seats. Accolades for student work. Until the teacher points to a drawing. My daughter's drawing.
This child chose not to follow the directions and just made a mishmash. You must stay within the lines, stay within the lines, stay within the lines.
Blood rushes to my face, devastation lasting long past. Parent conference night.
When did school become a gotcha experience? Bob and Martha have a plush couch. Their large sliding glass windows offer an expansive view of countless potted plants. They tell us about their grandsons, John and Paul, and how they've experienced teachers, most of whom have little to no knowledge of giftedness, Asperger syndrome, or Tourette's. I wonder if the teachers know about the boy's mother who has schizophrenia and their father who lives several states away and fights daily battles with alcohol addiction. Bob and Martha share numerous accounts of their grandson's brilliance, proud of these teenage boys, but still trying to make sense of what happens in school.
Parents are often able to tell me of their child's brilliance. How many of us think that they are telling tall tales, or question if they're at the very least in denial about the real child, the one we think we see?
Paying attention with eyes closed. The teacher would use a question as punishment, asking him something she was sure he wouldn't know. But he does. Foiled. Paying attention with eyes closed.
Next stop. She's gifted. Oh, yeah, and she has Asperger. She made 100 on the practice state exam.
Doesn't matter, doesn't matter.
She must review all day.
Drill and practice, drill and practice, drill and practice.
Out of her mind, she crawls under her desk, hands over her ears. Next stop, the principal's office for misbehaving.
Child must comply before we make any changes.
Sitting alone in the sandbox, playing quietly. Other children taunting, teasing. Ignore, ignore, ignore. Enough. Sand flies in their faces. Running, crying to the teacher. Next stop, the principal's office.
Off the honor roll. Can't go to music class anymore. Acting out. Totally inappropriate.
Next stop, the principal's office.
Flirting with the girls.
Well, what sixth grader doesn't? Just because he's in a wheelchair doesn't mean he doesn't have an attraction for the opposite sex.
Early morning fog lines the road as I make my way to Vivian's home. Not sure of where I am going, I call her.
No te ocupes. Yo voy afuera para que tú me veas.
I'll go outside so you can see me. I keep an eye out, and sure enough, soon see her waving at me. I turn into the subsidized housing unit, and she directs me to a parking spot and waits as I make my way up her front steps. As I enter, I notice a puppy on her couch. I'm immediately drawn to it, only to find it's a stuffed animal. She giggles and tells me how everyone that visits always thinks it's a real puppy. We make small talk as I set up the recorder. And slowly she begins.
Come and pick him up.
When he was in school, he had conduct problems. And they would suspend him. I mean, if not suspended by noon, he was already out. They couldn't handle him.
Come and pick him up.
Confusion. Why would a school that deals with conduct behaviors suspend my son due to his conduct? They were driving me crazy. They would call my work.
Come and pick him up.
Is he sick?
No.
Is he being aggressive?
No.
Then why are you calling me? Desperation. I need my job. He was sent home for 15 days. Not suspended, so they say. Frustration. They started calling my work again.
Come and pick him up.
It was affecting my job. Me, always nervous, couldn't eat, couldn't concentrate. Do you know what it's like to come home to feed three children and you haven't had a moment's peace all day? We had sacrificed so much, and still they kept calling.
Come and pick him up.
And calling.
Come and pick him up.
And calling.
Come and pick him up.
When my son was suspended for a month, I'd have to take him to work with me. I told her, I said, you need to find a way to work with him. Yes, I can go pick him up and take him home today, but tomorrow it's going to be the same.
Come and pick him up.
He tries to manipulate them, and he's really good at it. I let him know because he wants to be home. He knows that if he misbehaves, they will call me, telling me to...
Come and pick him up.
And I will have to bring him home. They were giving him what he wanted. He was manipulating them. Perhaps we should just send him to school one morning, no medication, and say, look, folks, this is the real Jason. Now what?
Come and pick him up.
Sorry, no services here.
Under the cover of silence. Homeschooling would be best, but you didn't hear it from us. It would be much better if you look elsewhere. In my area, there was no school with a special education classroom. He would have to be bused. You see, your son is autistic and we can't teach him.
Oh, no. He's not supposed to be here.
Where then? And when were you going to tell me? It seemed like they wanted to get him off their case. This was the last school. They were going to try it, but if it didn't work there, they had no place for him. 6 different schools in 2 years. How many more? I called the school, but they brushed me off. They said,
no.
They don't have accessibility for wheelchairs. They don't have exceptional student education.
It's a 2-story building. Classes could be anywhere.
One of many battles. He has a thermoregulatory problem. He doesn't sweat. He can't cool off. Up north, he had to be in an air-conditioned bus. Down here, there were no air-conditioned buses. So I called the school board and fought until they got him an air-conditioned school bus. Then they tried to take it away.
No, Mom, that cannot go in the IEP. It has absolutely nothing to do with school.
If he gets sick and can't go to school, doesn't that affect his education? The paper said one thing, but they would tell me differently. They would say, we can't deal with your son. But when my son came home from school each day, 75%, 85%, or 95% written on his papers, notes saying, good behavior, all day. Confusion. When I came here, I came with the idea that she would receive more therapy. But the school here said,
no.
So the pediatrician recommended speech therapy. But then the school said,
no.
I had to seek independent therapy because, again, the school said,
no.
Nobody was willing to accept responsibility for accommodations he needs to be successful. No one. Not the principal.
No.
Not the classroom teacher.
No, no.
Not the guidance counselor.
No, no, no.
No one would take responsibility.
She tells me of her job as a daycare assistant and shows me the letter she received just last week from Medicaid. Services have been terminated because she makes too much money. In my mind, I'm thinking, too much money? How much can she possibly make? $6.50? Maybe $7 an hour? With three children? Panic swells in my chest, and I ask her what she's going to do. She's calm and assures me things will work out. Somehow, some way, they always do. I wonder if I would be so calm, given the same circumstances. Their strength is evident as they talk about the lengths they went through to get the necessary services for their child, at times asserting quiet dignity, other times going on the offensive.
Picking your battles.
And I went in there screaming and told them if they didn't get her some help, I was going to get a lawyer. I went in there and demanded help, and I went so far above the principal's head, she got an assistant right away. Until they put the OT in place, I had to threaten them. I went the other day and I told them that maybe there was someone else who could help me, maybe not. But either way, I wasn't moving from there until they found someone I could speak to. They found someone.
I filed a complaint that my son was not at school. I still had him at home. The next day, they came to my house and they found a way to get him in school. Some people don't want to help. I write their name, the date I was there, the time. When I come back, I let them know who I talked to and what happened last time. Intimidation gives me what I need. I would fight until the end. I would move an entire town. I would fight no matter what the consequences would be.
Mold and mildew. First day of school, I see mold and mildew in the classroom. I asked the teacher about it, and she said, oh, don't worry, it'll be taken care of. But it wasn't, and he got sick, real sick. He was in the hospital for 2 weeks. The doctor said he can't go back there until it's gone, so I go back to the teacher. She gave me a real hard time. I went to the assistant principal.
Mold and mildew?
I went to the principal.
Mold and mildew?
I went to the health department.
Mold and mildew?
I went to the school board.
Mold and mildew?
I went to the superintendent.
Mold and mildew?
They put him in the library and condemned the portable. For 3 months, he was in another classroom. When he went back to her, it was a fight. She would call him names, put him down, degrade him, nitpick every single day. He would come home every day crying. He didn't want to go to school. He wanted to drop out. That was the school year of hell. That teacher's gone now because of her behavior, how she treated the kids, but it's too late for him. Her story reminds me of my son's experience in second grade. That was my year from hell. His teacher began calling me the first week of school and every week thereafter. He's disruptive, he's talkative, keeps others off task, doesn't do what he's told. I explained to her over and over again the need to keep him busy. Give him more work. He's bored, needs a challenge. She didn't hear. The next week, the call comes again, and the week after, and the week after, and the week after. She wouldn't stop calling, so I stopped taking her calls. He changed schools for third grade and got a teacher who understood him, expected things of him. He still talks about her demands that he learn the multiplication tables, a skill he found difficult to master. He was soon found to be gifted, thank God, for if he had not been found gifted, I fear he would have been found to be damaged goods. I realized that if you're smart, you can be eccentric. If you're not, then you're a problem.
Experts. I think this is the best for your son. Back then, I said yes to everything.
At the beginning, with my son, I would say yes, too, to everything they said, because I thought they were the specialized people. They know better. Emotionally drained. So I went along with the situation. I mean, teachers know what they're doing, don't they?
They would come with some things, and I would say, God, give me patience and strength, because I didn't understand why these people had to be doing this.
Come to the meetings, they said. But don't talk. It wouldn't be convenient. I didn't come all this way, make all these sacrifices for them to tell me not to talk.
They just tell you superficially what's going on. They don't really give you all the information. I wasn't encouraged to be a participant in the IEP process.
It was as if the educational system was fighting a war with my children and me.
Who are the experts? Classroom teachers? Parents? Researchers? How do we negotiate this? The parents wanted our counsel as researchers, experts in their eyes. We wanted their help. They looked to us for answers, and we looked to them for understanding. Early in our careers as K-12 classroom teachers, we rarely looked to either researchers or parents for guidance.
All is not bleak. I became overwhelmed with their stories and wondered, where have all the good teachers gone? Finally, I saw them.
The teacher, the paraprofessional, they're all very nice with me. I call them when she can't be in school. We have a good line of communication. She was so nice. She said she would take my son into her classroom. It was good to give him an opportunity, and she opened the doors for me, for him. It's a really good school, and I love the teachers. They're all really good with him. I'm so impressed. They write a daily note. This is what he did today, and if he ate, and if he slept.
I told the teacher, thank you. Thank you for whatever it is that you're doing. For the help, because every little bit, everything helps. And they said, just let us know what else we can do. She has the heart of a mother, in addition to that of a teacher. You can tell that she's an exceptional teacher.
As a parent, as an aunt, we found ourselves wondering about the parents' hopes and dreams for the future. Are they consumed by thoughts of their own mortality and the implications for the children they leave behind? How do they transcend those fears? Transcend. What an interesting word for us to use here. As if they need to rise above or overcome. Whose fears are these, theirs or ours? In retrospect, it is not they who are uncomfortable. It is us.
The future. When he experiences typical boyhood behavior, it makes us feel very, very happy. Because any boy would feel that way, grin like that, not because he has Asperger's and not because he's gifted, but because it's what a typical boy does. Laughter. His laughter. How we enjoy listening to it. A good, hearty laugh from deep in his soul. When that happens and he just lets loose, just a genuine laugh, and you know that something has really tickled him that is way beyond cool. Because any boy would laugh that way. Not because he has Asperger's, not because he's gifted, but because it's what a typical boy does.
I want her to learn as much as she can, so she can develop into an independent person, so she can do something. At least eat. She loves to eat. Once they were going to have to insert a tube into her stomach, and I said, no, that's what she enjoys. They're not going to take that away, her only joy.
What do we do 10 years from now? Will he go to college? Will he graduate from high school? What kind of job could he possibly hold? His future is our biggest concern. What will be of him when I am no longer here? That is something that goes through my mind over and over again. I hope that the day that I'm not here, he can take care of himself, be independent, because he's not going to have his mother all his life. I want him to feel comfortable, feel complete. I would like to know that he will be able to fit in somewhere, that he'll be fine. We want our children to be socially accepted, be normal, or pretend to be able to care for themselves, be out in society, improve, play with other kids, be as happy as our other children, communicate effectively, be able to talk. Yeah, be able to talk. So that one of these days, he can say, Mom, I love you. That dream gives me the strength to go on. I have faith, faith that he can and will do much better than what he is right now. I have faith. I have faith.
I wish now that I'd dispense my knowledge less and listen more to parents.